Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Pocket Imp Podcast. I'm Rick Henderson, and I'm your new regular host for the podcast going forward. Never fear, though, you'll still get your weekly fix of tech news, interviews, and reviews. In this packed episode, Pocket Lint's deputy editor Britta O'Boyle will be joining me to give her thoughts on the M2-powered Apple MacBook Air after having used it for a week. She'll also give us her opinion on the differences to the previous model and whether it's worth upgrading. In addition, I'll be chatting with Williams Racing F1 driver Alex Albon about a possible electric future for the motorsport and how technology helps or even hinders him on race days. But first, after weeks, even months of teases and talk, we're finally seeing the launch of the Nothing Phone, open brackets, one, close brackets. Pocket Lint editor Chris Hall has been following all the action to tell us more. So, Chris, the Nothing Phone is finally out there in the wild.
Yeah, it's now a something phone. It actually exists. Yeah, so Nothing is the new company of Carl Pei, who is best known for being one of the founders of OnePlus. And so it's no surprise that he's using many of the same techniques to hype up his new Nothing brand in the same way that OnePlus did when it launched the first OnePlus One. So we've seen we've seen leaks and teases. There's been exclusive sales of early handsets, and we've had waiting lists and invite systems to be able to get one. It was finally unveiled yesterday. I'm lucky enough to have it in my hand, so I have seen quite a lot more of it than most other people. And it is, to all intents and purposes, a mid-range Android phone. And that may not be what people are expecting, but that's what it is. It's a solid mid-ranger with the price at £399. That means it's going to be going up against some very competitive models. So that's the first interesting thing, that it's not going into a flagship race. It's sitting slightly lower than that. And obviously the thing that Nothing is trying to do is differentiate, and having said that tech was boring and that they wanted to change the game, they have done a few things to try and make this phone more interesting. The most obvious is what they're calling the Glyph interface, which is a series of LED bars on the back of the phone that can be used for notifications or to show your charging status or reflect when you're talking to Google Assistant, for example. You can set patterns for this so that when someone phones you, they get their own unique pattern and various things like that. And it is, you know, kind of just like having customized ringtones, but in a visual sense. And that, and the transparent back that lets you see something of the inside of the phone, is really the bit that's unique about this. And everything else is pretty much par for the course for the mid-range.
The one thing I noticed about it from afar, I haven't seen the phone physically yet, is it doesn't look like a mid-ranger. It actually looks more like a flagship phone. It looks like it's built really nicely. Is that the case?
Yeah, that is true. In the mid-range, there used to be a lot of devices that were plastic and, you know, perhaps moderate build quality, not great. But here you have a well-constructed phone, and a lot of people are saying it looks like an iPhone, and I can't deny that. I mean, the shape of the buttons and the location of the buttons on the side are exactly the same as the iPhone, and it's flattened. It's flattened aluminium. So, yeah, it's very iPhone-y, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, because a lot of people will pick it up, look at it, be reminded of the iPhone, then see that it's half the price and think, actually, this is a good quality device. And there's little things like, some low-level waterproofing that's been put in as well. The nice flush display with a very slim line of bezel that's equal all the way around, so there's no chin or forehead like you get on some other devices. So yeah, you're right. It's a well built phone, and it certainly does look good.
Going back to the launch slightly, it seems to me that Carl Pei has literally lifted his own playbook from OnePlus and launched Nothing in a very similar way. Is that the case to you?
Absolutely. That's exactly what he's doing. And I suspect that this was his playbook at OnePlus when launching the brand there. It's clever marketing. It certainly whipped people into a frenzy. And for a small startup company that so far only has a set of headphones, it has got a lot of media attention and has drawn in a lot of people to try and promote this. And the big market for this phone really is India. OnePlus had a huge following there. Carl Pei has quite substantial personal fame in India. And so I think that that's where it's going to be a big seller. The other thing to note, though, is that this is not launching into the US markets at all at this point in time. And I believe that's because the cost of launching a device in the US is so expensive because you have to go through all the different network testing. So the US misses out on it. India is going to get it full bore, and we get it in the UK and Europe as well.
Do we think it will never release in the US, or when things settle down and they manage to sell sufficient numbers and production lines? I mean, we all know the issue is stocks and chip shortages and production lines having issues producing in mass scale of devices. Do you think that that's also contributory and we might see nothing actually go into the US market at some point?
I think it may happen at some point in the future, but there are a number of brands who don't do so well in the US, and actually the selection of brands that you can get in the US has narrowed quite a lot. It's very much Samsung and Apple who are dominating the whole thing, and many of the Chinese brands just don't have much of a presence there at all. Some of them deliberately choose not to go there. Some of them, probably having seen the experience that Huawei's been through with the bans, has thought, well, maybe it's not worth the massive investment of getting into the US market if we're going to run into problems when we get there. So I suspect that at the moment it's about the affordability, making sure that they can build up a head of steam, get the order books through, get the manufacturing up to speed, as you say, and then maybe think, okay, we can now afford to launch ourselves into the US without bankrupting ourselves. Of course, what they're really doing is building up hype in a market that can't get this phone. And if nothing thinks that they have sufficient hype to attack the US market, then I'm sure they would go for it.
Are you a fan of the way it's been teased over the last several weeks to months? This drip feeding of tweets, this way of sort of like, and it's very clever, and it's obviously got nothing to be something, like you say. But are you a fan of that sort of, because we pretty much knew everything before it was even launched?
Yeah, I miss the days where you go to a launch or you watch a launch and you know nothing at all, and then you're surprised and there's a whole, you know, an outpouring of excitement because you've seen something you'd never seen before. Those days seem to have gone. It now seems to be impossible to launch a consumer product without pretty much everything being known about it. And even Apple don't seem to be able to escape this. So although this has been done deliberately, I think it's a shame that we miss out on those sort of big reveals where everyone gasps and says, wow, isn't this amazing? And then has to spend a long time catching up, because it's easy now, because we have all of this information in advance. A lot of people have made their decisions or made these judgments before they've even seen the phone, before the phone is even launched. And they're making judgments about the specs and other things. And so you kind of miss out on that actual experience of what it's like using a device, which becomes much more important for selling things. So I'm not a fan. It is a way of playing the media and getting lots of extra coverage. And of course, we play a part in that because we are covering these devices. But I do definitely miss going into a room and being surprised when I see something that has never been shown to the world before.
And I suppose my final question is, having had it in your hands for a little while, do you like it?
Yeah, I'm not actually allowed to say anything in too much detail because that is that's not going to be allowed for a little bit longer. But my first impressions of the phone are actually pretty solid. I've used a lot of mid-range devices, and this is doing all of the things that I want it to do. And so far, I haven't found any glaring problems that I'm going to get too worried about.
Still to come, we look at the new M2 MacBook Air, with Britta giving us her thoughts on its new features and capabilities.
It's definitely one of those things that you either probably love it or hate it, maybe a bit like Marmite.
Now though, luxury audio brand Bang & Olufsen is a partner of the Williams racing team for this F1 season and beyond, and so I was invited to Silverstone on the eve of the British Grand Prix in June to meet and chat with driver Alex Albon. As one of the younger racers in the sport, he is fully up on his technology, both home and in his day job. And with the motorsport constantly shifting towards a more sustainable and high-tech future, I wanted to find out his thoughts on what that means to him now and in the years to come. I started by asking Alex what recent technological advancements in F1 he couldn't do without.
It's hard because there's not really one thing that stands out. There's a dynamic between Formula One and, you know, the people that write our sport and govern it.
Yeah.
Who try to limit as much technology as they can. In some ways, they try to keep it raw. So we don't drive with much technology. You know, we don't have ABS. We don't have traction control. The basics of the car, no. A lot of the technology we have right now is for reliability and performance. So thinking about it now, the true tech is in the safety of the cars.
Yeah,
you know, if I actually look at how much time and money gets invested in crash structures and, you know, our well-being, I say I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah. How about analytics? Because obviously there's sensors all over the car.
Yes,
especially on practice days.
It is.
Does that help you?
It doesn't. It doesn't. I think there's an element of it's there, and it does help the whole team. But as a driver, it doesn't really play a huge part. For instance, you know, you can compare data and you can look at data and you can improve from that. But so can everyone. And so, yes, data moves things forwards. But it at least driving wise, at least from my side. It actually takes part of the skill away, because you end up being able to look at everything and understand everything. You know, back in the day, it was very raw. It was the engineer and the driver. You would tell the engineer you were fat in the corner and you wouldn't be, and he would believe you. And that was it. And that was the story of it. But there's a difference in it now. It's I don't want to sound anti-tech, but there is an element that we are reliant on tech, and there's some bits which I wouldn't be against not having.
And certainly when you're driving itself, you the sort of driver that likes the less amount of contact over the radio.
Yeah, it's strange. You know, I study data a lot. I look at what's going on. What we do is a lot by feel, and actually, you know, we're in our heads when we're driving, we don't need the data, but the data is almost a validation of how we feel. When we're driving, I still want to know what's going on, but a lot of the work that we do is before and after. Kind of once we're in the seat, we're actually completely in the zone, and we've done, you know, the tech is on the steering wheel for us at that present time, but it's almost robotic how we operate the wheel, and it becomes almost glued to us, where we don't even have to think about what we're doing. The guys at the factory, you know, we've got 1,000 people at the factory, they're giving the race team and you know, there's the data going on around here, they're giving us switches to change constantly to make sure the car's reliable, or if it's for performance, or, you know, whatever it may be, changing the strategy of the car. But as I said, you know, a lot of the tech and understanding is done before and after, where we do our homework. It's almost like a study before we drive, and then afterwards it's the debrief, the evaluation of how it went, and then we prepare again for the next session.
How about simulators? Do you use those?
I do. I would say there's two types.
Yeah.
Kind of the race team simulators, which are multi-million pound, and of course, you know, they have a lot of full-time people working on them, building the circuits, building the cars, the tyre technology, which is actually, I would say, the hardest thing about them. But also, of course, the motion and everything besides that. So they're in a different league where we are totally reliant on the simulator. I do at least one day before every weekend where I'm driving it to make sure we're happy with the setup and we're happy with the updates that are coming onto the car. It's become a thing now, you know, where maybe 10, 15 years ago it was taken with a pinch of salt. you know, oh, it's a simulator, okay, we've done this and this, yeah. but it, we just need to bear in mind it's a simulator, whereas now it's, you know, you fully trust it, you have to trust it, because the way that Formula 1 is now is so limited on testing. Simulator driving is actually the only form of driving that we get. We're totally dependent on it. And then of course you have the other side, which is the commercial side, which I do more for fun, and I do really enjoy it. I find racing and simulators, there's a great connection between what we do and what you can do at home. You know, there's not many sports where you can actually sit down, have the throttle and pedal and the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there's a little bit more with emotion and everything, but realistically speaking, you know, the direct translation between what the working day man or woman can do and what we can do is pretty close. And it's quite fun to be able to interact with people who, you know, we can, generally speaking, as long as it's not Mario Kart, we can jump onto a simulator and be quite quick and be able to race people who, you know, they've spent time doing simulator running and vice versa. These simulator guys, especially the Formula, the esports drivers that, for instance, Williams have, they're now crossing the bridge the other way. We're using them for our simulator because, you know, they've got a great feeling, they have great consistency, great accuracy, and we can start using these guys as to help us perform. So it's quite cool to see how the bridge between kind of just everyday home simulators to the career path of you know, go-karting all the way through, it's becoming closer, which is amazing.
Do you enjoy the official F1 games, or do you prefer to sort of not do F1 when you get at home?
Most games I play is not racing games, so I like to play, you know, all kinds of stuff. I like Valorant right now. VR games, which I play with my girlfriend. Racing games, Formula 1, yes. We kind of drove so much of Formula 1 in during COVID that you kind of almost got sick of it in some ways. But there's some great games out there, you know, like iRacing, Assetto Corsa. There's some really good stuff, and I have to tell you that it's amazing how good they are now. You know, you're getting to a point where it's you're lacking the motion and the systems that Formula 1 have, but the feeling is actually getting pretty close. It's very impressive.
Going back a track slightly, can you ever see a time when F1 will go all electric like Formula E?
I think inevitably it's going to in the future. It has to. There's obviously a very difficult bridge to cross because of, I guess, the relationship between how Formula 1 used to be and you know, we were running V8s, V10s and screaming, burning fuel every weekend to now. I mean, we've crossed the bridge with the hybrids that we have.
Yeah.
And so, just like the road cars you see today, it will lead into full electric. But it's going to happen. I think the challenging part is how do you keep the atmosphere and the drama of a Formula 1 car?
Because
the sound, you know, the technology itself is getting closer and closer. You can see Formula E now with a new generation car. That's another step forwards. And I think, I don't know if you saw Goodwood last week, but we had this McMurthy car, but all these electric cars now. I mean, doing the climb and
faster than anything else.
Exactly. So you know, we're getting to that point. So yes, I guess that's really the only side to it I see, is just making sure we keep that atmosphere within the sport.
Of course, Williams is now associated with Bang & Olufsen.
Yes.
Do you listen to music before you drive? Do you sort of like to use music to help zone out?
Partly. I'm not the biggest music guy. I do like music. Noise cancelling headphones are kind of essential to me, just because you know, when we are driving, the atmosphere is busy. We have a lot of people around. Coming here right now, where we are right now in the UK with the European hospitality unit, you know, I have my own driver's room. It's fine. It's closed off. I'll have the speakers on, and that's kind of it. Whereas, you know, we'll go to we call them flyaway races outside of Europe, where the circuits provide us these container boxes, but pretty much that becomes chaotic, and you really need time alone to focus.
Yeah.
I feel like you know, you need that, that space away, and at least with the headphones and being not being noise cancelling, you can zone away from it and, you know, focus on whatever it may be. And yeah, it is actually, it's a necessity to us.
Any specific tracks help you?
So, depending on the driver, I know, for instance, myself, I drive best when I'm relaxed. So, kind of chill music, my style. If I,
yeah.
I don't do well, perform kind of, you know, amped up. Some drivers, they want to be, you know, come out there fighting, boxing,
yeah.
Being aggressive. I drive best when I'm calm, smooth, precise. So, it's amazing how kind of the music you listen to kind of translates to that, and so that's kind of the music I tend to gravitate towards, just because yeah, it helps me get into that zone.
Do you have any other gadgets in your life you couldn't live without?
Trying to think of the ones outside the obvious. I'd say the ones that we use mostly are kind of these general tracking apps that we do, so, you know, for our food, for our nutrition,
yeah.
for our sleep, for our fitness. You know, we use an Oura Ring, we have fitness apps with a heart rate belt that we
yeah.
connect to the Polar equipment. And then we have, I'd say that's more or less it, but it's really important. You know, I kind of live off my phone, and a lot of my information
yeah.
is here. My trainer, we have a, you know, we have a sleep doctor, we have a nutritionist, and we have my full-time personal trainer. With them three in mind, you know, they're getting all the feedback from me through my phone, and I know there's questionnaires that I fill in, and as well they see all my data, and that's all for performance. You know, we need to
yeah.
get the right sleep with all the jet lag that we have, and the food, you know, with the Oura Rings and whatever it may be, depending on the days, if I'm feeling a bit tired with whatever the marketing duties that we have, and there's a whole strategy behind performing, and all them three things kind of come together. So yeah, I'd say that's the collective group that I'm heavily.
That makes a lot of sense, the fitness tracking stuff. Again, it's back to analytics and data.
Exactly. We live in a world now, and especially in our sport,
it's helped in sport generally, hasn't it?
Like, yes,
I mean, it's just
exactly.
completely transformed sport.
And there's there's technology always coming out for what we're doing. Even you know, like we have the light drills, so we use what we call blaze pods,
yeah.
and they are kind of reactive stuff, and we use them every session without doubt. It's again just to wake up the mind, wake up our reaction times, and again, they, you know, they have software to see how our reaction time status is. You know, kind of it's almost a stress test as well, because they're trying to check your if you're making mistakes or not during the reaction drills.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, we're heavily reliant on it, and especially Patrick, who is my my performance coach. You know, he's always looking out there for the latest technology to try and help perform better.
Do you, finally, this is my final question, did you like to use an awful lot of technology in your personal road car?
My road car, sure.
Yeah. Is there anything in that road car that you actually now couldn't live without?
Okay, I'm trying to think. Not in terms of road car, not until the basics. Now, I have a Mercedes GLE, which is...
Yeah.
packed with technology. It has all the gizmos, with the kind of the lane changing assist, the auto distancing, obviously we have Apple CarPlay, but all that kind of stuff. And I kind of use it quite a lot. Like, you know,
yeah.
I just leave it in cruise control and let it kind of have my finger just resting on the top of it, and let it drive me around. But yeah, there's nothing. Nothing obvious.
Do we now all take it for granted?
Possibly so. Like, I'm a huge fan of classic cars, and I kind of enjoy the rawness to it. So there is a... It's weird, it's because I'm involved in so much tech, but maybe part of me is why I also enjoy the simple stuff. And, yeah, you know, like classic cars for me... are quite cool, because it's so you're so connected to the car. You know, there is no kind of autopilot where you can just switch off. You're kind of always in control of it. So maybe so, yeah.
And so we come to our weekly review. This time we look at Apple's M2-powered MacBook Air laptop. Joining me is Britt O'Boyle, who has been using one on a day-to-day basis for a week. So Britt, having played with it for a while, what do you think of it so far?
Oh, it's actually amazing. I literally love it. It's so nice. The design is beautiful. It's flat now instead of the slightly curved. You know, the old ones had slightly curved lids?
Yeah.
It was that wedge design. They've got completely rid of that now. So it's now looks exactly like the Pro models, basically. So it's flatter, much flatter, much sleeker, and just refreshed, basically. It's lovely.
Apple does that with, it always gives you that initial pick it up and hold it feeling. It's always good, in my opinion, of their devices. That's something that always runs through it. So when you open it, what are you getting?
So pretty much most things are the same in terms of the keyboard. You get slightly, the function keys are the same height now as the rest of the keys, which was different from the M1 MacBook Air. And so that then means that the Touch ID button in the corner is also slightly bigger. But that's all good things, as in we like that about it. But it's mainly the screen, actually, that's different on this model. You get the notch at the top of the display, which has meant that the bezels around the display have shrunk, which is lovely. It gives it a much more updated design. They've also lost the MacBook Air logo at the bottom, which I didn't think that I would really like, but actually I love it. But it's also brighter, and it's a liquid retina display instead of a retina display. So it's slightly brighter, and you can actually tell when the models are side by side that it's much punchier. The colors are brighter and more vibrant. That's pretty much the differences visually anyway.
Will people be put off by the notch? Because obviously there was a massive debate about notches on mobile phones and trying to get the screen estate so that there is no notch. And now they've gone and added one.
Well, see, this is the thing. It's definitely one of those things that you either probably love it or hate it, maybe a bit like Marmite. But I have found that I think because I'm so used to it with my iPhone, I just don't really notice it, to be honest. I don't notice that it's a notch and not just, I just enjoy the slimmer bezels. So I've not really, it's not something that I am against, but I can see that some people might find it a little bit annoying. It does definitely give you there's 0.3 inches bigger display in a smaller body. So actually you do get a little bit more than just a notch, if you know what I mean. It does add value as well. So I definitely think that would help. But yeah, I mean, there might be some people that aren't the biggest fan of it, to be fair.
And I assume it kind of hides within a toolbar anyway, because most applications and Mac OS itself has a top toolbar.
It does. And actually that toolbar is slightly less squashed. I know that sounds a bit ridiculous, but there's a little bit more space. So everything's just got, it's just a bit airier looking. It just feels a little bit more spacious, a little bit nicer. It definitely makes a difference to that top menu bar, which is nice.
Now, of course, the big internal change is the M2 processor, the M2 Apple Silicon. Yeah. Do you immediately notice the difference?
Yes, actually you do, because I was working on the M1 MacBook Air prior to reviewing this device, and you can definitely tell with just like minor sort of day-to-day tasks are just a little bit smoother. The M1 is still a brilliant machine, so you're not going to sort of lose out necessarily massively if you're doing day-to-day stuff, but it definitely does improve stuff. And just the stuff that takes, or you expect to take that little bit longer, sort of image processing, video editing, those kinds of things, they are definitely speedier on the M2 device for sure.
And of course, the next version of Mac OS, I always forget what numbers we're coming up to. Yeah, that's the one. The next version has quite a few sort of like Apple Silicon features that are going to make even better use of the M2. So you've tested it using the current version of Mac OS. Let me get, is it Monterey? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, it is. And so of course, while that is faster, there are even better and bigger features coming to the next Mac OS.
Sure. That there are definitely some good ones coming. Stage Manager, I'd imagine, will make massive use of the M2 chip just in its capability or in its ability to switch between tasks and stuff. I think that will be even more evident that it's faster when you get to do that.
I mean, you know, it's clear that you really like the new MacBook Air. However, like you say, you've been using the M1 version, which was the last model. And say if you are a punter with the M1 model, is there any reason really to upgrade?
I think, honestly, that depends on how much you like design, but also what you do with your laptop. So if you're a casual day-to-day user that perhaps doesn't need it for sort of image processing or video editing or anything like that, and you're sort of just doing, you know, day-to-day bits on it, then no, you probably don't need the power of the M2. And if you're not fussed about the design, then you're not going to be overly bothered. If you are someone, however, that does appreciate design, there's definitely a big difference in this model. The wedge design has been around for nearly 10 years. So the fact that it's changed from that now, from when Steve Jobs took it out of that envelope, it's definitely got, it's definitely a reason to buy it, I suppose, or to upgrade. You also get a few other bits. You get a full HD camera on this one. The memory can be expanded up to 24 gig instead of 16. The display is a little bit brighter, like I said. And there's a few other bits like the speakers, although the speakers is a bit of a funny one because they've now slotted it in behind the keyboard and under the display. So it's sort of right at the back of the sort of bottom of the laptop instead of by the sides of the keyboard. And that actually means that I would say the speakers don't sound quite as good as the M1 speakers do, just because you get less space for the sound to travel, I think. But also, the new one does come with spatial audio support. So there is that if you need an extra reason to upgrade, I suppose. I think you're probably okay with the M1 in terms of performance, although you will see an uplift if you get the M2. So it depends on what you do, I think, would be the answer to that.
I think another question of mine is, if you're in the market for a MacBook Pro, is the MacBook Air worth considering instead?
So again, I think that depends on what you do as a day-to-day job. Now, obviously, the Air doesn't have a fan, so using it for long periods of time to do quite high demand things will mean that it might not be able to cope quite as well as the Pros would. And also the Pro just has a little bit extra power. The M2 13-inch Pro is pretty much identical based on the specs, near enough. There's a few things you get with the Pro, but not loads. So in that case, I'd say I'd probably stick with the Air over that. But that, again, it does depend on what you do with your laptop. If it was me, and based on what we do with our day-to-day things, I would buy the M2 Air. But a video editor, perhaps, or someone that does a lot of image work, I would say the Pro model is probably still the one that you would need to buy.
I suppose my final thing is, if push come to shove, would this be your work laptop of choice?
100%. I literally so upset when this leaves my house because I literally adore it. It's lovely. It's such a nice laptop, honestly.
That's it for this week's podcast. I hope you found it enjoyable, even illuminating at times. If so, please leave a review on your listening platform of choice. For now, I've been Rick Henderson, and I hope you'll join us for the next podcast, where we'll have another packed lineup of guests and tech for you. Keep safe and well, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Sometimes the transition to fall and winter feels like experiencing every season on the same day. The shoes in the Allbirds Mizzle collection were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Check off your errands with the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Or upgrade to next-level protection with the Wool Runner-Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.